Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Jay Davis Show. I'm super excited to have our guest here with us today. His name's Nate Raby. He's the co-founder and managing partner at RX3 Growth Partners and a good friend. Welcome to the show, Nate.
Thanks, Jay, for having me on. Appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, can you give the listeners kind of a quick background on how you landed at RX3 and some of the things that got you there?
Sure. Yeah. So RX3, we're a consumer growth equity fund based in Orange County, California. Our real differentiators, we have a number of professional athletes and celebrities that are investors in our fund. And then we look to align ourselves with consumer brands where we can provide value beyond capital using that differentiated network. And we try to do that by facilitating relationships in an authentic way with the brands that we invest in. We invest across kind of the consumer landscape of primarily health, wellness, active lifestyle. I got involved with RX3 and that started it in 2018 with my two co-founders. One of the co-founders is a guy named Byron Roth of Roth Capital, which is a investment bank out here in Orange County, California. And the other one is Aaron Rodgers, who now is a quarterback of the New York Jets. So RX3 is the three of us back in 2018 with the idea that I've known Aaron 20 years, kind of saw the access that he got by being a professional athlete. And, you know, we did a bunch of investments together, but, you know, often we invest in early stage companies, a lot of risk in early stage companies, lack of liquidity takes a long time. And Aaron, the brands would want Aaron to be kind of the face of it. And so we said, hey, I think there's a better way where we can, you know, continue to get this access, but, you know, get a number of professional athletes, influential people and business people together where we can not only see more deal flow, provide more value, but mitigate some of that inherent single investment risk. So 2018, I was at Roth Capital before running kind of the private capital group, decided to break off and start RX3 with that exact idea, is that let's get a bunch of these athletes together and form a fund where we can invest in later stage growth companies and co-invest with some of the top blue chip firms in the world because we have a differentiated strategy. So that was back in 2018, and now we're currently investing out of our second fund.
It's amazing. What do you think has been different as you've shifted, or maybe even some of the learnings that you've gained as you've shifted from more of that early stage to a little bit later in the cycle?
Yeah, what are the learnings? And I think I don't even know if I answered your first question. I just kind of went on the story how it started, which is great. Awesome. But yeah, the learnings, there's a number of learnings that, you know, I'll answer that a couple of different ways. So I think in general, the learning from early stage to later stage is has, you know, whether you're have experience in investing or not, you know, private assets are illiquid and they're just generally tend to be riskier than the liquid investments. And so especially for people that are in our fund, investors in our funds, maybe have less even experience than some others. And so for us, being able to show returns was very, very important for us. And I think there's, you know, which is why we've been very intentional out of the gates to not focus on seed or traditional venture companies, but rather be more growth stage. We're okay taking less risk for less upside, just so we can have a shorter time frame to liquidity. So, you know, we like, it's just easier to diligence. You're not just betting on a founder, which, you know, a lot of venture firms have been very successful at doing. That's just not really where we play. We like to really kind of understand the company and be able to do kind of proper diligence to feel comfortable. And again, look to underwrite kind of 3 to 5 times our return within a 3 to 5 year period is kind of where we look. And also with a lot of the athletes that we work with, stage matters. You know, we don't want to kind of invest in a brand that's not going to make it or be around. So by investing in kind of more growth stage brands that more likely to succeed, and that's a little easier for us to kind of get behind and really kind of use our network to help fuel their growth.
Yeah. That's amazing. As you meet with a prospective investment company, what are the things that you're most looking at? Like, what are those things that you're like kind of trying to clue in on, things that you've learned, you know, another piece of this that I love asking investors, have you found that your gut is usually right, that it's, that it can be right and wrong? Like, what are some of those things that as you meet with new companies, you're paying attention to?
Yeah, I think, and that's shifted too, just with the macro environment, the way that it is. Founder is extremely important. So, you know, I think it's the founder, how are they incentivized? Do they have equity in, or are they just brought in so they have real skin in the game? Have they done it before? Have they kind of either had an exit or been a CEO before, or kind of been through some of the ups and downs that when things don't go right, they're going to be able to kind of navigate or bring in the right people to help them get through that. In this market, having kind of a focus on profitability is really important for us. Again, not wanting to take that early stage risk. I think there was a time when these companies were able to raise a lot of capital because they were kind of high growth companies in the DTC era where you can just kind of buy your customers, and that's definitely shifted. So we really focus on companies that have really strong fundamentals on the business side, and clear path to profitability or profitable is something that's really, really important to us. There's always a gut feeling, but I think, you know, we try to look at as much you can in terms of, you know, where their sales are coming from. What's the retention like? Are people coming back? Are they talking about it? Do they have an omni-channel approach versus just a single marketing strategy? I think there's a lot that you can look at. And then for us, you know, we need to be able to have some sort of a differentiator. So be able to provide some value beyond just capital. And you also got to look at, you know, why are you getting access to that deal? So a lot of factors that we go into, but the founder and CEO is definitely something that is important, which is why, you know, we're still talking and have built a good relationship over the last little bit here.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's great advice, and probably something that a lot of entrepreneurs are still learning. I think that's sometimes the real challenge as an entrepreneur is you're this optimist, kind of visionary, and it's hard sometimes to understand the perspective of investors and what they're looking for and what gets them excited. What's been the hardest part of your career? What's been like a challenging time where you really had to kind of really lean in and see what you were made of and go through some challenges? As I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, especially in the consumer space, now is a very difficult time in that consumer world. What are some lessons you could share about difficult times you've gone through?
Yeah. You know, I think difficult times are a sign of growth. So I think it's really what you take away and what you learn from those times. And I think it's important to realize everyone goes through difficult times. If it wasn't difficult, probably wasn't worth it to do that. One of the challenging things that, you know, of just funds in general, specifically a fund like RX3 is we have kind of have the cool, sexy factor because we got a lot of well-known athletes and influencers and different people that are involved in the fund. But at the end of the day, you know, we're fiduciaries and our job is to generate returns for our investors. And on the fund side, just as companies go out and raise capital, and it's, you know, I'd say meeting and finding the right capital providers for a founder is very important to make sure your incentives are aligned, your goals are aligned, the vision in terms of where you want the company to go is important because that's not always the same depending on who the investor is. Similar with funds where you have LPs, which essentially your investors, making sure that you're aligned. And we are very fortunate in that we have a very diverse group of LPs, but that can also create some different interesting dynamics and challenges in terms of capital calls and getting people to lean in and different things. And again, it's very rewarding, but I think there's also challenges that come with that. And it's also, you know, at the end of the day, it's we kind of, as a fund managers, work for LPs. And so, you know, there's nothing more important for us than generating returns. And I think as long as we can kind of stay focused on that, we're going to be able to continue to do what we do. But over the last year and a half, just as there, you know, I think arguably this has been the toughest fundraising environment in the last 2 to 3 decades, both on the private, public, and on the fund side as well. And, yeah, you know, we were fortunate to get our fund closed last year. So just kind of right before, and a lot of that's through strong re-up of existing investors and people that we know. But because of that, we also haven't had to haven't deployed a lot of capital. And so I think it's finding the right opportunity, staying disciplined, not trying to deploy capital just to deploy capital. And I think, you know, even some of our companies that are going through a lot of headwinds with the macro environment, it's kind of, you know, rolling up your sleeves and knowing that this is just a period in time and kind of doing what you can to get through this. Because I think no matter what line of business you're in right now, I believe that we're going to come out of this. I think we're already starting to see that from an investment side too. So I think advice is that, again, this is just a moment in time. I think knowing that I think there's brighter days ahead, especially over the last little bit, at least what we're seeing on our side on the consumer spending and consumer investment side.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. It's definitely, I think that's what's challenging as an entrepreneur is that up and down. I mean, like you said, I love what you said about growth, that it's reminding yourself that difficult times bring a lot of opportunities for growth and also a lot of opportunities to kind of come together as a team and get closer. We've definitely seen that with PillowCube, where the team kind of leans in and it's amazing to see that. And you just kind of find what you're made of.
Yeah, the companies that come out of this are usually the strongest, right? And there's been a lot of consolidation in the market, a lot of companies that haven't. And the other kind of just piece of advice that I would give to founders is we're doing it with our own portfolio is everyone, as I mentioned, is kind of going through a tough time. And so like more than any time, I think companies and brands are more open to strategic partnerships that are very complementary. Whereas before people could try to kind of keep their customer data. Like now I think entrepreneurs and founders, that's a rare breed, a special type of person that from a personality trait standpoint. And I think in general, entrepreneurs are very collaborative. And so I think reaching out to other entrepreneurs that are complementary to whatever your brand is, we've been kind of setting up a lot of those strategic partnerships that have been working very well, that allow you to kind of gain new access to customers that you didn't before just by aligning with other entrepreneurs. So one thing that I think a lot of founders, because it does take a certain person, there can be an ego and a pride thing involved of not wanting to ask for help or admit that things aren't going well, especially if you have someone's capital that you're, again, a fiduciary and need to make sure that you're making the right decisions. But people want to help people, and especially in this environment, and founders and entrepreneurs, I've noticed more than others. So I always, you know, we kind of go with our portfolio and really try to find out who those strategic partnerships are and try to help facilitate those, because I think most people would be surprised with how many other people in a similar situation just want to help everyone get through this.
Yeah, that's a great reminder. I think that's definitely the challenge as an entrepreneur sometimes is being willing to admit that you need help. You kind of want to, I noticed this in myself. I want to like, I can do it myself. I want to show that I'm like a valuable or trusted entrepreneur who can just figure it out. And I think there's a piece of entrepreneurship that's very needed. You need to just have this belief that like, we'll figure it out. But I think that's a great reminder of people want to naturally help. And so ask for help.
Yeah. And even when your investors are already investors with you, so you don't need to sell them, or you don't need to like lie to them to make things look prettier than they really are.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, if you're going through a tough time, like reach out to people that are already stakeholders in your business. And I think, again, just humbling yourself and be a little bit vulnerable and let people know, hey, we really need some capital. We really need a new CMO. We really need help with whatever. And, you know, we encourage our LPs and our other investors to do that. If people reach out to us, we'll kind of do whatever we can within our means to help them out. And so I think knowing and reaching out to the people that are already part of your team, whether it's investors or otherwise, for assistance, something I think, again, a lot of people don't do. And communication is important. As soon as you stop communicating, if you're a founder, you stop communicating with your investors, it's usually not a good sign. And so people like sharing positive news. So be transparent. And that's a good thing. So don't be afraid to, you know, admit that if you do a podcast on the side, that's a good thing for you too. For the listeners here, I met Jay quite a few times and never told me that he had the secret podcast. So I'm kind of excited when I got the invite here.
That's part of my growth plan, on the podcast.
It's part of the growth plan.
Tell no one about it.
Yeah.
Do no marketing.
You got a good thing going on here. You know, just be vulnerable. Let people know I'm a podcaster too and a good CEO. That's good.
No, it's funny. Every time I post about it, I feel like maybe this is just the algorithm. So many people are like, you have a podcast? I'm like, I've posted about it like 10 times. Obviously, people are not seeing the posts, but I should post about every single episode. That's the goal I'm walking away from this episode with.
When I got the email, we had our data analytics team scour the internet, and they were able to find something on it. it took a while. It took a while, but they found something, so that's pretty exciting.
Like 40, so you can find it. It's there.
You can find it if you want. If you really want to listen to it, you're out there. But you're doing a nice job keeping it a secret.
I love it.
I'm going to spread the word for you, Jay. We're going to get everyone on this thing.
I love it. I love it. Well, mission accomplished that I've kept it very secret. One of the things I really love about RX3 and in our conversations, I think you guys have this this great ability to help scale the brand, get awareness around it. What do you think most entrepreneurs, though, don't understand about working with athletes and celebrities, and how do they approach it in the wrong way? And then how do you think they should approach it?
Great question. We deal with that a lot. And kind of our real secret sauce is really aligning athlete celebrities with the brand when there's that authentic connection, and doing it in a way that, you know, they're going to support or use the product anyway, not because they're being paid to do so. I think the days of like the social posts, you know, pay me and I'll do a social post or whatever it is. If you don't even use the product, that just doesn't work. Consumers are smarter now and they see right through that. So what I think, you know, obviously very biased, but what our model is, you know, we're aligning and there's no better alignment than truly having equity where we win if the brand wins. And so you're truly aligned from a right incentive standpoint. And so when you're looking to partner with the right athlete, celebrity, whoever it might be, try to find a way to structure the deal where you are aligning the right incentives, whether it's through warrants or, through them doing something where you guys are benefiting together. And what we found, if you do that, like the deliverables don't really matter because they're going to be using the product in their regular life anyway, and they're going to go above and beyond whatever the deliverables that you agreed upon in ways that, you know, you didn't even think that they would, because they're incorporating on their daily life. So I think, you know, finding the biggest name is not always the best person either. Engagement is super important. So we have the big name athletes, celebrities that to get us in the door, it's kind of the sexy names that, move the needle from that standpoint. They put them on the press release, but from an engagement standpoint, that's not always the right fit. So, you know, having the micro influencers, maybe not the biggest NFL player, offensive lineman or whoever it might be, they all have their own kind of ecosystem of fans and like that are going to be highly engaged with their content. So social following is not as important. It's more about finding that right fit for whatever the brand is. So Pillow Cube, it's, you guys are lucky because everyone sleeps and would benefit from a Pillow Cube. So if you haven't got yours, I would go out pillowcube.com and get it now.
Love it.
But you have to, was that the right timing? You told me to make sure I plugged that in at some point.
I'll send you your Venmo later.
Okay, perfect. And then now I'm incentivized because we have a nice little back commission in from that little plug there. So it makes it a win-win for both of us.
Yeah.
So authenticity is key, and trying to force someone to do something that is not authentic, consumers see right through that.
Yeah. No, I think that's such a great point. I think that's where you see the celebrities or influencers who are doing great brand partnerships and great deals. They really love the product and it's something that they use. And then anytime they get caught kind of not using it or caught being inauthentic, that they actually don't like that brand, they don't ever use it, they don't wear it, I think that's such like a huge hit, you know? And so I think that's a really good point. Great approach. And I think is very true. We've had some of the biggest influencers, celebrities in the world, and this isn't a knock on them, but they've posted about it. And often it's the woman. We have a couple of different influencers who much smaller audiences, and they will outperform kind of the biggest celebrities in the world at times because their audience really knows, like, hey, this is a huge deal to me. So I think that's great advice. What's been like one of your investments that you're like super proud of, very excited about? I'm sure there's a lot, and maybe you can mention a couple, but what are some of those that you're like, man, that was just kind of almost magical, like that whole experience and seeing it grow. What are some of those that are in your highlight reel?
Yeah. I mean, Jay, it's kind of like asking who your favorite kid is, you know, we like them all, but I don't have a favorite kid, but if I did, it would be favorite.
Let's do that.
Yeah. My daughter is definitely on the first place right now.
But, okay.
You know, I think there's some that our model works better than others. So I'll answer it that way. In that Hydra was one, which is like Peloton for rowing, came out like right during COVID. People were so excited to be working out at their house. Rowing was something that not a lot of people even knew was like a full body workout. We had a lot of success with getting Hydra in the hands of a lot of influential people who were posting about it, talking about it, and really kind of helped build awareness for that brand and continue to do so today. Therabody is one that's been a great one for us, and that all of our athletes and most people are familiar with Theragun, Therabody. So it's a household name, easy for us to get behind because most of our athletes are using it all the time. And so we've been able to kind of do a lot with that. And it's a brand that resonates with a lot of kind of our ecosystem. And that's one that we continue to feel very excited about. Another one, Full Swing, is one that's just been a rocket ship. It's the golf simulator. A lot of our athletes, regardless of the sport, are big fans of golf. So being able to have the simulator is one that it's really kind of allowed golf space in general is a category that we like. But creating some unique partnerships there has been something that's been exciting. So we like it when we can kind of find a brand that our athletes are asking us to, hey, how can we help? How can we get involved? How can I do a deal? How can I, you know, be more than just capital, which is what we really pride ourselves on. And so that's why that brand alignment is important. And then on the other side, in terms of just like companies that we love, you know, just kind of steady, eddy, healthy, very profitable, high cash flowing companies. One of ours is a company called Chemical Guys, which we exited, which great relationship with the founder, now is an advisor with us. But car care product is one that, you know, people love their cars, and it's a kind of recession proof category, as well as pet, which we're in a couple of pet deals. So we kind of like, there's you know, little things we like about each one of those, but our model does lend itself better to specific brands than other. And the ones I mentioned are definitely fit that. And there's other ones like Manscaped, which has been a fun one for us. That's had a lot of high growth, and they're creative in the marketing, so willing to do different things. But they're all the brands are different. Their needs are different. How we can support them are different. And that's really kind of the fun part of the job too. So I'm not going to rank them. If you want me to, I can go rank them. I have that, but I'm not going to do that. I don't want on camera here.
Yeah. No, you don't need to. No, that's awesome. There's so many great brands, and you guys have done an incredible job, as have those founders of growing and making them household names. It's really fun to see. One of the ones I wanted to ask about specifically, I think this is Therabody's been inspirational in that they've really been able to shift from being known as kind of like a single product. And now they've been able, even in the shift in the name, been able to build out a bigger ecosystem of products with this shift to Therabody. What tips or recommendations would you give to entrepreneurs as you've observed that and other companies go through that process? Because I think that's one of the processes or challenges I notice a lot of entrepreneurs are going through is they have an idea. It's a great like single SKU company. They start scaling and then they say, how do we expand? And there's a lot of different companies that have done that really well, but there's also a lot that have failed because of that. They never really go outside of their single SKU, and that becomes in some ways their downfall. What recommendations would you give or what learnings have you gained from some of these companies you've been working with?
Yeah, great question. How you worded that question may sound like you have some personal experience with that as well.
Yes.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Therabody is a great example. You know, Therabody, the reason I think they've been so successful is because they were able to gain the trust of the customer by being the leader in percussive therapy. And so it's kind of anything tangential within the recovery space. I think they had the right to go in to expand that. So they've kind of stayed core to their recovery, the percussive technology, and kind of expanded that. But if they went out of the gates and like now they have, we have TheraFace, which is more a beauty line that we're working on. You have the jet boots and the recovery air that, you know, if you went out of the gates and you said to an investor, hey, I'm going to do all these different things, it's not very attractive because you haven't really proven anything out. So I think you have to really stay focused on the core business first before you get distracted and start going into all these other areas. We talk about at Board Meetings, a lot of these companies is, you know, we can definitely go into all these areas, but it's not only capital, it's human resources and human capital that is a big factor that plays into going after some of these other categories and sectors you might want to go into. So I think is, you know, be an expert at what you, whatever your core business is prior to trying to go too far outside. And then when you do kind of expand, you know, make sure it does have a similar customer and, you know, it's associated with the core business, because there's people that do one thing and they try to jump into a whole other thing and they want us to give them credit because they're so excited they're going to go do whatever. But it's who's to say that the team, the manufacturing, whatever it is all going to be the same. And so Therabody's done a really nice job because it's kind of stayed core and they've kind of expanded the right way. And now it's more, you know, Theragun is still the Kleenex, in my opinion, of percussive device. And they have the unique kind of triangle there. But I think there's a lot of growth to be had in the other sectors and the that they're kind of going into in because they've done a nice job of not only a couple acquisitions, but also innovating.
Yeah. No, they really have been inspirational in that way. I think that is just a challenge, especially in the D2C space right now. D2C has grown so much. And so you kind of had this flood of people come in who were like, oh, I want to do that too. Then realize like, oh, it's harder to expand and it's harder to know. And then there's been other groups who really waited. And I think that waiting was almost a big mistake. Yeah. We now look where they just said, hey, we're going to do this one thing forever.
Yeah, you got to innovate. It's like you're saying, it's hard to know when the right time is. Because if you're like now, if you want to go public, you got to be more than a single product company. Like it's just not going to work. But you also don't want to get too distracted where you're hurting the core business. Like you're saying, you know, I also believe if you're not growing, you're dying. So you have to be innovating. You have to be doing new things if you want to stay a leader in a specific category. It just has to make sense with whatever it is that your the new product is. Like with PillarQ, you know, there's a lot of different directions that you can go and easy add-ons. It's not going to disrupt the core business, whether it's the cases or like we talked about some of the new innovations that are coming out there. Like those all make sense and that's easy and you can kind of test them and doesn't really take much to put it online and see if it's working or not. And then you can kind of cut it if it's not. Therabody does the same thing. Like there's a lot of products that we've tried that didn't fit and, you know, you just kind of take them off. Because you're not really sure until you put it out there with that. So I think you're exactly right. I'm not saying find one product good at and just only do that. That's not it. I think it's just making sure that it makes sense with the right customer base, with the right infrastructure of whatever that brand is.
Yeah. No, I think exactly like you said, it's making sure that you have that trust in that category and then doing things that make sense. I think a lot of those brands that you guys, Manscaped has also done a phenomenal job of doing things that are like, oh, that makes sense. It's not something where they're going so out in left field that you're like, why is Manscaped doing that? And I think that's a good gut test or gut check for entrepreneurs, but it can also sometimes be difficult to know where that line is and kind of pushing that boundary. So love it. Anything that you're excited or working on that you want to call out or kind of give a shout out while you're here?
Obviously, shout out to Pillow Cube, just the most comfortable pillow on the market today. Just the fit with your shoulder and how your head just lays right on it is just phenomenal. So big fan of the Pillow Cube for sure. I'm assuming that was the tee up there again. That's good. We got two in on this episode. Is that the, maybe that's the most.
I think that's contractually what you had to do. So yeah, I think
it is. Well, as being agreeing to be the 100th episode guest, you know, I figured we had to at least give you what I agreed upon. So
yeah, exactly.
We're excited about kind of things turning around. So I think we've been in a little lull, recessionary, whatever you want to call it. Different market than, you know, the few years prior. And I think, you know, we're starting to see a turnaround in opportunities from an investment side, from, you know, not only the founders and the brands that have kind of made it and coming out, like have realistic expectations on valuations and what a real partner looks like and gotten their business in a healthy spot, kind of trimmed the fat of whatever they needed to get through to come out better. And so from us on the investment side, we've been pretty patient to deploy, as I mentioned, and we're excited about a lot of the really strong brands and opportunities that that we're seeing. So it's been looking forward to a good 2024 and beyond. I think there's still some, you know, it's going to take a little while, but we're definitely starting to see a shift in the consumer mindset and spending power.
Yeah, no, it's good to see. I think a lot of brands had the Q4 shock, and everyone's kind of fighting through it. And so that's, again, like you said, it's those challenging times that really show you what you're made of. So it's definitely a good reminder. So thanks for coming on and being a great guest. Really appreciate it, and for the friendship.
Absolutely, Jay. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Let me know if you need anything else, but I'll be go to pellicube.com.
Thanks, guys.